Hi, everyone. I'm just going to start without our moderator. I hope that's okay. I just want to make sure there's enough time for everybody. So this is the international health section, and the talk is called HIV-2, because I'm pretty sure there's no sign outside, just to make sure you're all in the right place. And I don't have my bio in front of me to read, so I'll just tell you a little bit about myself. my name is Chloe Waters, and I currently work at ITEC, which is the International Training and Education Center for Health in Seattle, Washington. And I got my MSW and MPH at University of Washington in Global Health. And most of my research I've done in Peru with Partners in Health, and I think that's it. Okay, I'm just going to go. So the title of my talk is Social Support Amongst People Living with HIV in Extreme Poverty in Lima, Peru, an exploratory study at the beginning of HEART. And I apologize, I have a cold, so I might be drinking water while I'm speaking. I have no relationship to disclose. I do want to note that the photos that I'm using in the presentation are not study participants of the current study, and all subjects of the photos have written consent for us to use the photos. I'm going to go first through the background and rationale for the study, and then I'll talk about the methods we employed, and then I'll talk about the key themes that emerged, and then the conclusions that we drew, and the next steps. So my learning objectives for you all at the end of this session, I hope that you'll be able to describe the sources and characteristics of social support used by people with HIV when they're starting HIV care, and then also explain the obstacles to accessing that support and the impact when that support is accessed. And the study is a baseline study that fits within a randomized control trial that assesses the impact of CASA, which is the community-based accompaniment with supervised antiretrovirals. And this is a visual representation of what CASA means. So basically, patients start in at time zero. That's when they're first starting treatment. And they have a treatment supporter and a health promoter. And the promoter provides twice daily directly observed therapy and critical psychosocial and physical support for the first 9 months. And then at around 9 months, there's a phasing out of the supporter. Of the promoter. And the supporter and the patient work together to do self-administration. And then by the end, it's just the patient and the supporter. So we're doing analysis at 0 months, 12 months, and 24 months. So what this analysis is looking at is the social support at time zero, so when people are first entering HIV care. So what's the situation of HIV in Peru? Peru has a relatively low HIV prevalence of 0.4%, yet only 35% of those that are HIV positive are receiving treatment. And the capital area carries the burden for disease, and that's where we implemented our study. And the risk factors for HIV in Lima, or in Peru, are men who have sex with men, a number of sexual partners, and early sexual activity. And yet amongst the most impoverished patients, heterosexual sex is still the most common risk factor. So in 2004, the Ministry of Health began the National HIV Program, which began providing medications and consults for free for eligible people with HIV. Yet the costs that patients still have to pay for are transportation costs to get to the hospitals and diagnostic fees, and then also supplementary medications. And along in this, the National HIV Program is using a treatment supporter model, so that's When you sign up, you have to sign up with a supporter, and that's usually someone in your family that it's an informal support to provide adherence and encouragement in the house. So we use the stress buffer model as our theoretical framework, and the theory is that social support improves health outcomes by mitigating the stressful effects of illness. It diminishes the negative threats to adherence. So the idea is that social support acts as a buffer, which then will lead to clinical response to ART. And so when people are beginning HIV care, a variety of resources must be accessed to facilitate clinical and psychosocial recovery. And our hypothesis is that those with access to that social support are more equipped to access these resources. And these are both internal resources, such as your own coping mechanisms, and then also external resources, such as people encouraging you and reminding you to take your medication. So the research objectives for this baseline study are first to explore the sources and characteristics of social support when people are initiating HIV care, and then also describe how access to social support affects an individual's ability to cope with the various stressors during this critical period. And just a brief overview of the methods that we used. An exploratory study, or studying something like social support, really requires qualitative methods. That's what we used, and we sampled using demographic sampling based on age and gender for maximum variation, and then we also used sampled specific at-risk groups such as men who have sex with men and sex workers. And we used a semi-structured interview guide to interview both patients, people with HIV, and then also their treatment supporters separately to triangulate. And for data analysis, we used multiple coders for intercoder reliability. And just a brief overview of the characteristics of our sample. As you can see, the majority are not partnered, and they have an average of one child and a CD4 count, a mean CD4 count of 160. And we interviewed 20 people with HIV, and then of the treatment supporters in the lower box, we interviewed 15 treatment supporters, and the majority of those are female. And then just a note about the families and where people came from. Most people come from families that are living in extreme poverty, since we used a poverty index to sample to make sure people were living in extreme poverty. And then also families that are really, or people come from families that aren't intact and have a history of abuse and violence. So the themes that came up, we divided our themes into formal social support and informal social support. So first I'll just give a brief summary of our themes, and then I'll go through each of them. So formal social support, we found that at this time when people are initiating HIV care, that there's an increased barrier to access these resources. So these are HIV services, mental health services, and social services. And there's also increased need for these services at this time. And what happens when people access the formal support is initiation of recovery. And then for informal social support, at this time when people are initiating HIV care, their social network is restructured, and that turns up in loss of social support from some casual friends and from partners, and yet a trusting confidant comes up as key emotional support. And what happens when people have access to the informal support is enhanced coping. So first, talking about formal social support, some of the barriers dividing into different levels. At the structural level, poverty is a real barrier for accessing the formal social support services, and also a complicated health system where it's difficult to get integrated medical care. And then at the community level, some of the barriers include stigma from the community and also from providers at the community level that work at the health posts in the neighborhoods. And then at the individual level, a barrier is disability and also fear of discrimination and depression. So a quote that depicts the barriers of formal social support, the first one is from a young male participant, and he said, "Sometimes there's just not enough money, not for my bus fare nor for my food. To pay for the cost of the hospital, I have to take it from my food budget or ask my sister for money." And another participant talked about the fears she has when she has to go to the hospital every week for her consults. She said, "When I leave home, the only thing I do is ask God to make me invisible." So in terms of the increased need for social support at this time, people are entering HIV care with really advanced HIV, so there's a lot more hospitalizations and health complications. And also at the initiation of treatment, there's more baseline tests that need to be done, so people need to get to these services more frequently. And also they're in a state of worsening mental health and crisis. So a quote that depicts that is a participant talking about a side effect she was having in her decision to not take the medicine. "I have to get injections to treat the side effects, and they're 5 soles, about 180 each, twice a day. Since I don't have money right now, I haven't gotten them in 2 days, and now the rash is back." So when people do have access to their health providers, it really is this crucial element to recovery. And while some people spoke about health providers at the community level in the health post showing HIV-related stigma and discrimination, the doctors and the providers that were at the hospitals that are specialized for HIV care played this key role in reframing the consequences of the diagnosis. So this one patient talked about this key thing that her doctor told her, which was, the doctor told me, look, you just had an operation and you're healthy. What you're doing is killing yourself because this depression will kill you. It will, not the disease. There's treatment for this. So this really reframed the disease in her mind and started this cycle of self-efficacy and coping, and that she could overcome it. So in terms of informal support, at the time when people are starting HIV care, many spoke of their network really changing significantly, and there's a loss or lack of partner support, and that's either due to denial on the partner's side in terms of the diagnosis, or abuse about the diagnosis, or a separation and abandonment. And there's also an isolation from the community. A lot of people isolate for fear of discrimination or for fear that people will find out that they have HIV. And finally, there's a pruning of the social network, and that's either self-imposed or externally imposed. And it's so people have just a few trusted confidants that they use for support. And so a couple of quotes that depict that. One woman who was talking about her partner, she said, he never came to see me. He never believed it was true. And another said, at the neighborhood restaurant, when they see me so thin, I feel humiliated. They served my food in a disposable container, seeing me like this. So when people do have access to their social informal social support, it comes up in this key emotional support that usually comes from an immediate family member, and that person's the treatment supporter usually. And usually that's a female member of the family, so either a daughter or a mother or a sister. And one quote that depicts that, these are both quotes from treatment supporters, actually. And the first one is a daughter that moved in with her father with her young son to take care of him. And she said, I came to be my father's treatment supporter because who else would take care of him? I'm the one because everyone else is too old now, so it's my turn. And then another one who's a neighbor, she said, I feel bad. What else can we do? All we can do is tell her everything is going to be fine, that she has to take her medicine and do her part. So the support from people around them was really encouragement and letting them know that they could do it and helping people take their medication. So this impact, when people have access to informal support, it really starts this self-acceptance and acceptance of the diagnosis, and it activates this cycle of coping, despite the fact that people still spoke of feeling waves of depression or emotional distress, they still had this kind of new getting to acceptance. And also having someone, at least one or two people close to them, who they could be open about their diagnosis, normalize the disease and mitigates the internalized stigma that a lot of people feel. So one woman talked about how she feels fine in her private life, yet not in her public life. And she said, medications allow me to live a normal life. In my house, though, not yet in my whole life. And another one depicting acceptance, she said, I decided that I'm going to be fine. I'm going to care for my daughters for the rest of my life, God willing. I know that I'm not going to die. I've practically accepted my diagnosis. I have accepted it. I'm taking the medications. I'm doing well, thank God, and I can resume my role. So just a brief overview of our conclusions. The results show that when people have access to this key formal and informal social support, that it has the ability to initiate recovery and coping and acceptance of the diagnosis. And follow-up interviews that we'll be doing might show whether individuals who identify a key social support in person are, might be more likely to be adherent to HIV care and achieve psychosocial recovery. And then a programmatic recommendation that would come out of this study is to prioritize social support and to really reinforce this role of a treatment supporter model. And I'd like to acknowledge the many people that, the committed people that helped us carry out this study, specifically the research staff in Lima and at Socios en Salud, and then also, of course, the study participants and their families and the community health workers. Thank you.